for members only, Golf Smarter number 407, published on October 22, 2013, is brought to you by the new Golf Smarter app for Apple and Android, now available for free at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
More fun with writer Shane Ryan on his Sensible Rules.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Shane.
Well, thank you very much, Fred. Happy to be here.
And thank you for the continuation. This fun article that you wrote for at Grantland.com. Is it Grantland or Grantland?
You know, it's named after Grantland Rice, the writer, so you say it like that.
Grantland.
But if you want to say Grantland, like it's some kind of theme park, please be my guest.
Yes, come on in and you will win $10,000 to put to a cause of your choice. Grantland.com.
Yeah, yeah. It's a theme park for nonprofit grants from the government.
That's right. No, we're putting Bill Simmons' children through college. Thank you very much. He is just the golden boy at ESPN. I mean, it's been amazing to watch his rise to superiority from obscurity. He's amazing. Have you hung with him? Have you gone to a basketball game with him? Or
you know, I went to LA one time, and he was not there when I went to visit the other Grantland people. But yeah, no, he's certainly great. He's great.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So the article that you did called 10 Sensible Rules for Golfing with Others. We only covered number one, keep your swearing to a reasonable level. And number two, never throw or slam your club in anger. But we want to get up to 3 through 10 here because it's just so much fun. And I wanted to call you out on some of this anyway. So let's go to number three is when your playing partner is struggling, just shut up.
And this is something that I think I've always known instinctually. I don't think a lot of the other rules I've broken. I think this one I'm pretty good at. You know, when somebody is struggling and it's obvious that they're angry, you know, I just sort of stick off to the background. Whereas I was telling you, my stepfather, now we golf together and it's usually really fun, but he's somebody who every time you make a bad shot, he's very encouraging, but if you make a bad shot, he's got the solution for you. You know, he's got the tip and it's just like, don't talk to me right now. I'm so angry. Don't right. talk to me. And I think in general, there are certainly people who I'm sure are different, but I think in general, most of us, when we are messing up and having a disaster of a round, we will gladly take advice after the round over a beer or something and not in the moment right after. I think that's the wrong time to do it.
Well, of course, you're playing. You're not supposed to be giving lessons. And who are you to be mm-hmm. giving lessons, right?
Well, my stepdad is very knowledgeable at golf, and he certainly has taught me a lot, and it's great. And I'll always take his advice, except in those moments on the golf course. Sometimes I have to tell him, just leave me alone, please.
Yeah, please. I've learned that when I go out with my son, it's like, all right, before we start this round, let me ask you now. Do you want me to make any comments on things that
go.
I notice or not? Mm-hmm. And he goes, no, just shut up.
That's a great approach. And it's good that you do it before the round because if you're with a friend or somebody in the middle of the round and they say to you, hey, like, and they always do it this way. Hey, do you want some advice? Do you want some unsolicited advice? At that point, you almost can't say no because you're being very rude. So you have to say, even if you really don't want the advice, which I usually don't, you have to say, oh, yeah, fine. Tell me what's going on. And you have to sit there while they lecture you. But your approach is great. Like, establish it beforehand when they're not pissed off.
Same with betting rules, right? You got to establish it ahead of time.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to get that beforehand.
And you know, the other thing is, I'm sorry, but even and with all due respect to your stepdad, even if he's been playing golf for 40 years, 50 years, whatever it is, has he ever been a PGA certified professional? I mean,
no.
It's amazing that a PGA professional can look at you, take two swings and go, here are the things that are working for you, where somebody else has all these different things you're doing right and wrong.
Yep.
And they want to tell you during the round. And it's like, just shut up. You're right. You're exactly right. So again, I am in no position. I'm just a guy who asks a lot of questions. I'm in no position to give anybody advice, but I have said to people in the past, do you mind if I make an observation about something I noticed? And it's generally what I will do has nothing to do with mechanics.
Right,
right.
Like your clothes are too tight or something.
No, it's like, like, don't put so much pressure on yourself. You know,
yeah.
It's like, women who are new to the game and they're out with their spouse or something, they're like, oh, I'm really awful and terrible. And, oh, God, I got a 5 on that one. It's like, you know what? You just make double bogey your par. And if you get a double bogey, you succeeded. Just let it go with that. You don't look at par as something that you need to be trying to do.
Yeah, no, that's I think that's great. I think those pieces of advice, especially when they're positive like that, like, hey, you're doing great. You know, they're good, because I think people, when you play with them, especially when they're new to the game and they're new mm-hmm. to playing with you, I think there's a lot of insecurity there. And you catch people a lot of times apologizing. And the one thing that I always appreciate and that I try to do for people in the rare case when they're worse than me, which really doesn't happen very often, but I say, you know, listen, like there's absolutely no need for you to apologize at any point during this round. You know, like that, I just think that's such a nice thing to say, because it puts people at ease. And it's like, you know, I don't care if you shoot a 150 today. We're having fun, and you don't have to apologize to me, believe me.
Well,
so
I love the way you wrote this. Or you'll diagnose the problem. Quote, you didn't open your hips and you lifted your head. And then you put,
yeah.
Don't, period. Ever, period. Do, period. This, period.
Yeah.
It's very good. Number four is, don't take forever lining up the arrow on your ball when putting if you're a bad golfer. I'm going to call you on that one. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I'll let you state your case, and then I'm going to smack you.
Well, you know, I do this, and so and I'm going to continue doing it, because I know it gives me a better chance to make the putt, even though I'm terrible. I just think, like, I have heard from other people, not necessarily when I'm playing with them, but just about other people, that if you're, yeah, people who are shooting 110 or whatever, who are sitting there lining it up precisely, and then they smack it 15 feet past, it's like, look, don't be so precious about it. Just get up there and hit the ball. But I'll continue to do it. This is one that I'm going to continue to break. But yeah, let's hear. You think, I guess, that it's cool, that it's okay?
Well, I've been called on taking too long when I'm putting. But I, you know, it's pre-shot routine. I have a pre-shot routine, and mm-hmm. part of it is lining up, going to both sides. You know, from either side, looking at the ball or looking at the line from either side of the pin, to making sure that I line up where I want to start the putt, because I want to make sure that my body is parallel, you know, to that line.
Sure, sure.
You know, so there's all these little nuanced things that golf does that I will do. And so I try not to take forever. I try like to do a lot of this stuff before it's my shot while other people are shooting, which may be annoying to other people in other ways.
Yeah, that is a thing that I do too. I'm like, wait, am I... And maybe you can tell me, because am I allowed, when somebody else is taking a putt, not at the moment they're swinging, obviously, but... am I allowed to be down lining up my putt? Because I've tried to do that so that when it's my turn, I'm not taking forever. But then I'm wondering, am I distracting them in some way?
Well, that you can A, ask, do you mind, you know, if I'm moving around while you're putting? And two, is as long as you're not in their line of sight or on their line, you know, I mean, I know this one guy that I play with who always gives lessons when you're playing. Is, you didn't do that, you should do this. You're not, like, it's the most annoying. But he also, if you are standing, he's right-handed, so if you are standing behind his right shoulder off mm-hmm. to the side, so you feel like you're out of his line of sight, he freaks out. You're like, no, you can't stand there, you gotta move over here, dude. Relax.
yeah And that's always interesting too, I guess, if you're, that's sort of like the blind spot, is in they're gonna catch a look of you when they shift their hips back.
I don't know.
I think, yeah, you're supposed to be in the open part, right? But again, I'm not very precious about that sort of thing. Yeah. I don't care where people are, because, you know, I'm bad enough that it's not going to really affect me.
Well, listen, whether you're a good golfer or you're a bad golfer, putting is a different part of the game. And,
oh, sure.
And
sure.
You know, it's like the amazing statistic. What's this amazing statistic that inside of 10 feet, even guys on the tour only make 50% of their putts.
Yeah, yeah.
So, right. You know, everybody is definitely a level playing field when you get onto the putting green. But yeah, that's definitely where things get slowed down just a touch. Not a lot, but just a touch. So let's move on to number five. Seriously, come up with a system for forgetting your wedge by the green. Which the thing that cracked me up about this one is, this is where you got most of your comments in the article.
Mm-hmm.
Most people were commenting on this one about coming up with ways to not forgetting your wedge on green and then having to run back. Go.
Yeah, yeah. And it is such a brutal thing. And I've done this a number of times, unfortunately. It's such a brutal thing to Well, I like to walk when I golf. If I have a choice. Yeah, I prefer walking to carting. I do both. You know, if somebody else wants to cart, I'm not going to make them walk with me. But when you're walking and you forget a wedge, and that's a 10-minute excursion to walk back and get it. It's bad with a cart too, because sometimes people are hitting on the next hole and it becomes difficult, you know, you have to wait for them and everything. It holds everybody up. It's my least favorite thing. When somebody says that, even though I've done it before, it's just one of those things you're like, oh no, this is going to be a whole issue. And I didn't realize that people were talking about the thing of leaving the wedge on the flag, which is interesting. So that when you pick the flag up, you have to get the wedges.
Right.
My problem with that is sometimes when you hit your wedge, you know, it's not time to take the flag out. So what do? Hold on to the wedge and then put it by the flag when the flag comes out? I don't know if that's a great thing. My thing I do now, which has always worked, is just leave it, the wedge, between you and either the cart or your bag, mm-hmm. wherever that is, mm-hmm. So that when you're walking back, you'll trip over the wedge, if nothing else, and you'll always remember it.
Right. Yes, that's a good place to do it. I also take off my glove when I putt. So I generally will try to, if I have a club sitting there, I'll try to throw my glove. You know, it's like when I go to a friend's house and, you know, like my wife and I'll go to a friend's house for dinner and we'll bring the salad, right? We'll bring something along for the meal that, you know, so we have to remember to bring our bowl home, which we always forget. So what I've started doing is I leave my car keys in the bowl or in the fridge. You know, where we kept the food or something. That way, when I get in the car, it's like, oh, I can't start the car. Oh, that's because I forgot to pick up that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you forget
leaving
your
stuff
glove,
behind that you need for your, you know, your next moment.
Yeah, that's actually a great system. I'm going to start doing that too, because you can do that. You can do that immediately, can't you?
See how much you learn on Golf Smarter. This has been useless
great.
Information.
Wonderful. No, it's true though, because right when you hit the wedge, if it's on the green, you can take that glove off right then because you're putting. So you put that there, and then the most you'll forget it, if at all, is on the next tee. That's I'm into that one. That's I think that's my preferred of all the ones I've heard. I think that's the best so far.
Oh, thank you very much. I actually have a I had a question a moment ago, and it's now completely gone. Wow. It really is. It was a good question, too, and now it's gone. Okay.
It'll come back. It's still in your brain somewhere. You'll be taking a shower later
tonight. I'm not sure it's in my brain.
I read this thing. This is such a tangent, but I'll be quick about it.
I'm good at that. I'm really good at that.
Well, there was this article in the New Yorker a couple years ago, which was fascinating, which was that this phenomenon sometimes of when you are thinking of thing or trying to think of a song or a question that slips out of your brain, and it comes at these strange times, like where you're about to go to sleep that night or when you're in the shower or whatever, and it comes unbidden after you've stopped thinking about it. That's because your brain – there's a part of your brain that does not stop working on this problem when you're seeking an answer. So beyond the point when you've consciously told yourself, look, I'm not going to think of this song, so I'm going to forget it, and you go about your day, your brain does not stop thinking about it. And your brain is problem solving. And the minute it solves it, it sends that answer to you, whether you want the answer or not. So that's that whole thing of like you're in the shower and you're like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, the song is How Soon Is Now by the Smiths or something. Why did I just think of that? Well, it's like it's because your brain has been toiling away, waiting, just trying to find the answer.
What? All right. Number six. While you were giving that awesome explanation of that, I was trying to think of it. I still can't remember what the question is.
Well, your brain will keep working long after you forgot.
You haven't been around long enough to know that a lot of people, their brains stop working. I can assure you, as you get older, people's brains stop working. All right, but let's get to number six here. Know the rules before playing through.
Yeah, and this is just general politeness. I mean, it's one of those things on a crowded course. Don't be the guy who's always trying to play through everybody, because it's just like it's stacked up and you're not getting through. And I think that's very annoying. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, if the course is open, don't be the foursome that's keeping the fast twosome behind you the whole time. Let them go through. If you're in a foursome, don't ever expect to play through.
Right. And
that's basically just some basic.
But what if they, obviously if things are going to slow down, they're going to do it around a par three. That's where people are, you know, waiting. And then you get, you hit, I just knocked over my drink. You hit up to the green, and then they're standing there at the green, and you know that they can play through. So then you're all standing there, and they hit through, and then you just let them, you rush them through the putting green, and it makes everyone uncomfortable for there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there are ways to do this, but what if they catch you on 15? I mean, at that point, do you like, it's like, you want to play through? No, we're fine. Go ahead. You know, it's like, yeah, at some point, I guess it's like before number 12 or 13, you don't have to let them play through anymore. When, where is that? Is there a,
yeah, it's a, I mean, it depends. I mean, if they're super fast, then it's just like almost any time, except like you said, maybe after 16, it's not worth it anymore. But, you know, the last four holes of a round or five holes can take an hour. You know, it's one of those things. It's almost never too late.
And why do we even have to discuss this kind of stuff? You know, that's the other thing. I mean, I love the way you put it in the beginning of the article, that it's a sport so polluted by etiquette and decorum.
Right.
You know, it's like, is it really? Do I really have to wear a collared shirt tucked in?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. No, I know. It's something else. It's really interesting.
Number seven, never hit a ball into another group of people in the hopes of speeding them up. You idiot.
Yeah, and I've never done this, and I don't think I ever would have. This is, to me, this is like the biggest violation of etiquette. It just proves that you're a bad person if you do, if you do this in a way. It's just so, like, have a discussion with them or something. You know, don't hit a golf ball at people. I mean, it's just, that just goes beyond. And when people do it to me, I mean, I take their ball and I throw it in the woods, or I pocket it or something. It's only happened a couple times, but to me, it's unforgivable doing that.
Being on the very friendly left coast, I have a friend who, very big guy, like 6'5", 6'6", and a New Yorker with a street sense that is very strong. And when somebody is hit close to us without yelling four, he'll turn and start walking towards them. You know, and like, and his aura, his presence gets bigger and bigger and bigger the closer he gets. And you see the fumes, like, whoa, dude, you're embarrassing me. Cut it out. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's scary. And it's always kind of like, well, I was playing with my stepdad in Maryland July 4th. And this group, it was kind of in between, like they were kind of hitting into us a little bit, but it was sort of like 10, 15 yards short. And I really wanted to pick up their ball, like I said I did, but then I was like, I don't know, is it worth a fight? And it's just one of those awful situations where you're like, why do these people have to be like this?
Right, even the thought of, is it worth a fight and you're on the golf course, totally do not work together.
Yeah, right, yeah, no, it distracts you and it makes you angry, and, you know, as we know, golf, you don't need another reason to be angry while you're playing golf.
No. Now, yeah. Number nine, it not only is it a sensible rule, but it's actually, like, one thing that I have found over the years is really critically important, unless, of course, you're playing with somebody and you need to get in their head. Mm-hmm. But number nine is, don't worry about your score until after the round. Of course. Right?
Yeah. People? Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm on a quest to break 100 now, and I'm very close. I had a 101 recently that was included a nine on the last hole, which was unbelievable because I'd been playing so well. And so I am.
Let me guess. You looked at 17, you looked at the card and said, all I need is a par and I can break 100, and you shoot a nine.
Yeah, and worse, the whole back nine, I was like, wow, this is the round of my life. If I just average fives from here out, I'll be great. And I did. I got a couple pars, and I got to the last hole, and I had a five iron into the green, and I just hit it perfectly. And right as I hit it, I said, well, that's easy. All you needed was a nine on this hole. You know, and you're going to get it because you're I had sprayed my drive. So this was actually my third shot. So this is going to be on the green. It's perfect. And I hit it so well that it flew into the woods beyond the green.
Oops.
Then I found it, which was very unfortunate, because if I hadn't found it, I would have been fine. I could have dropped and chipped in and two putted. Unfortunately, I found it, chipped back, hit a tree, chipped back. It was just awful, unbelievably bad luck, and ended up taking a 10 on the hole. And again, for my 101, it was just really bad.
Isn't it amazing how golf works itself out to, even if you're having the round of your life and not paying attention, it'll something will happen. It's like, oh yeah, this is what I shoot. You know,
yeah,
it'll bring
yeah.
you back to your score.
Yep.
It's amazing how that works. It's like it's hard to have the round of your life. I mean, it doesn't.
It is. It's very difficult. Yeah.
So yeah, keeping score is to be done later. Just like talking about business, you don't do that on the golf course. You do that afterwards in the bar.
Right, right.
Yeah, you learn about whether you
learn. Or in my case, never.
Yeah. Well, what you do on a golf course is you learn, based on, especially on all of this, you learn if you want to do business with this person, right? How do they handle themselves on the golf course? And is that a kind of guy you want to do work with? Does he cheat? Does he throw his clubs? Does he lie? Does he, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't want to work with this guy.
That's a good call. Yeah, there's a Grantland Rice quote that said, it's something like, you can learn more about someone in 18 holes of golf than you can from blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, and I've nothing kind of exposes wondered, character more than 18 holes of golf, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. A part of me is like, is it true? But then, I guess, especially if someone cheats, then you kind of know, like, oh, okay, this person's rotten. And I'm someone, here's another question for you, Fred, that I wanted to ask you. I do not like to pick up a ball ever. And I think people get annoyed at me. I don't care if the putt is 2 inches. I want to put it in. And I especially know from my own experience that a foot-long putt is very missable for me. And I'm very scrupulous about wanting to have my score be exact, not some kind of like, oh, I took a 3-foot putt here, you know. And I don't know. Is that I think some people kind of get annoyed when they go pick it up, and I go, actually, I don't like to pick it up. Is that some kind of faux pas?
No, it's interesting because I like to hear the happy sound too. I call that the happy sound when the ball goes into the cup. That's the happy sound. And also, there's a couple things about that. First of all, I have a friend who's always, go ahead, pick it up. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to pick it up here because this is not necessarily a gimme, right?
Yeah.
And he is waiting for me to tell him, pick it up. And I'm like, dude, I know you. I've seen you miss that putt so many times. There's no way I'm going to give it to you. Mm-hmm. So, no, I'm not going to give it to you. But if you've established before the round that that's going to happen, that they're going to like, yeah, we're going to, you know, pick up the short ones just to keep the pace going. You've got to, as soon as he says that's good, pick it up. Don't go ahead and like, yeah, okay, thank you. And then tap it and miss it. Because, well, wait a minute. Never mind. Well, I rushed it. If I took my time. No. I said pick it up. You didn't. You missed it. I'm sorry. You blew it.
Well, also, though, that's a good – that would be an interesting match play strategy too. The minute somebody says it's good, say thank you, and then miss on purpose so that in their head they're going, oh, crap, I cost myself.
Do you play for money?
You know, just like $5 with a friend or
but
something.
But you do. You golf is a gambling sport for you?
Oh, yeah. I think it just keeps it interesting. I always – when I play with friends, almost always play match play because we're all bad, and stroke play just would not be good because we're taking like a 10 on some holes. Yeah. So we play match play, usually there's $10 at stake or $5. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a club fitter once ask me, he's like, you play for money? I'm like, no, I don't like betting. I don't like gambling. I don't find that entertaining. He goes, then why do you play golf?
I enjoy gambling. I don't gamble on a large scale, but I like playing poker. I like just having a little bit of money at stake. I think it's, I don't know, it's kind of fun for me. And I don't usually, so far in my life, I've not gone overboard, so yeah. Although I do have a lot in my family who have gone overboard, so I gotta be careful.
You've got to be careful, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go to number 10 then, which is hilarious. Wear some weird golf clothes.
Yeah, I think that's just a wonderful part of the sport is the strange outfits and attire. And I've only gotten into this a little bit. I'm in the process of losing weight. I'll give you some insight into that you probably didn't want into the life of Shane Ryan here. But I think, you know, once I drop maybe 20 more pounds, I'm going to start wearing some cool golf clothes because I think they do look better on skinny people. But, you know, the slim pants and the odd patterns and the whatever, you know, maybe the
loudmouth, right? The loudmouth clothes that John Daly wears.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like Ian Poulter, you know, some of them, right. I think some of them are more than just loudmouth. Like, I'm not going to go out and wear like American flag pants or something, you know,
thank
like
you.
That's not my style.
I appreciate that.
But, Yeah, because that's so tacky. But
well,
I think
you definitely don't want to call attention to yourself when you suck.
That's true also. Yeah, no. So it's a process of losing weight and improving at golf before I can really pull any of this off. But yeah, it's just some of them are sort of loud, but also kind of classy and neat clothes, you know. And I think there's a whole fashion world that's developed around this. And I think if you're going to play golf, you know, and you have some – you know, if you do it a lot, I think you should take advantage of that and wear these weird clothes.
You say here as a last word of caution, don't dress like Ricky Fowler. Is there an age limit to that? I mean, like someone my age, no, I'm not going to dress like Ricky Fowler because I have to bend the bill of my cap and take the tags off of it. But I mean, if you're under a certain age, can you dress like Ricky Fowler?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't like his style anyway. It's like this skate punk style or whatever. I just don't think
the Justin Bieber of golf.
Yeah, it's like I don't like the flat brim. I just really don't like it. And
especially
it's,
on baseball players.
That's what it started, I guess, or when I remember it starting was like Jabba Chamberlain for the Yankees wearing it, and I just hate it. I think it's such a, I don't know why. I just really don't know why. It's just a poor style. So I wouldn't do that, but yeah, certainly that skate punk style is something you associate with youth. Yeah, don't try to pull that off if you're too old, I would say.
Yeah, and you're right. The Ricky Fowler Sports Center commercial about, are you colorblind?
Good.
Because my children are, both my sons are colorblind, and one of them is, he compensates very well. He can figure out what clothes work together. And the other one just says, I'm color stupid. Beyond color blind, I'm just color stupid. So he doesn't know if anything matches that day or not. He needs someone to dress him. But
that's funny.
But the SportsCenter commercial is brilliant. The one with Ricky Fowler.
Just comedically, it's so good. It has three beats. You know, the whole game is not only is he colorblind, but specifically with orange things. And it hits, and they're in the world of the kitchen. It hits the milk. It hits the decaf coffee thing in his clothes. It is just a perfect commercial with great performances. It's so good.
So good. So we've got a couple minutes left here, and I just want to get your sense now that the four majors for 2013 have been completed. And you are a reporter. You want to give a recap of how this season has played out versus how it was predicted?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's first in the Masters, I thought it was pretty nice to see Adam Scott win because I'm one of those people when somebody has a disaster in a major, I really want to see them recover for it. I think Jean Vandeveld is one of the saddest stories in golf. And Greg Norman to some extent too, even though he won majors, what we remember him for was after those majors when he had these big chokes and the poor guy just kept giving himself opportunities. And so Adam Scott last year at the British Open had one of the all-time chokes. You know, he really blew it. And it was nice to see him win the Masters because I think he's a great golfer and, you know, I think it gave him that confidence and I think he's going to have a brilliant career. And, you know, similar with Jason Duffner at the PGA this year.
I want to stop you a second and talk back up with Adam Scott and having this caddy, right? Does that have any impact, do you think, on his game? Stevie, yeah, getting Stevie from Tiger.
Yeah, I think Steve Williams is a good caddy. He's a jerk. I mean, he's an aggressive kind of person that I really don't like.
Have you encountered him?
Yeah, only loosely. He's never spoken to me directly or anything, but I've watched him deal with the gallery and other people, and he's very abrasive and arrogant. I just am not a Steve Williams fan at all. And, you know, very much carries himself in a way that's – and not to diminish caddies. What they do is, you know, they have a big role, but he carries himself like he's a player. You know, he really thinks he's something else.
Well, listen, there were a couple of years there he was making more money than most of the guys on tour.
Yeah, but again, just by virtue of earning 10% of whatever Tiger makes, right?
Exactly.
So it's not like he's doing anything special.
No, but I think there was one year that he was number four on the money list.
Yeah, right. That's funny. And yeah, somebody from the gallery this week, I loved it, and it was kind of cruel, but they yelled out to like, way to carry that bag, Steve. Very much like, and you could tell he was really annoyed by that because he's so pompous.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's done well for Adam. I think I don't know how much a caddy helps because I say that as in I actually don't know. Maybe it helps a lot, but his results have certainly been good since he had him. So
yeah, okay. So we figured out the Masters. Move on.
Well, yeah, and I was just talking about Duffner, how he had a similar situation in 2011 where he bogeyed three of the last four holes at the PGA, and that allowed Keegan Bradley into a tie with him, and they had the playoff, and Keegan Bradley won. So, again, with Duffner, it was nice to see him win a major this last weekend because he's a really good guy, I think, and he's a funny guy and somebody who gets mocked a lot because of the whole Duffnering craze and everything. And so it was nice to see him win. I think he deserved it. So that was good too.
But do you, congratulations to Duffner, but you didn't really do anything to advance the excitement of golf.
Right. Yeah,
people are not going to start playing golf because, did you see, I'm going to go start playing golf because Duffner was so exciting.
Exactly. Yeah, no, he's a snooze. But, you know, and it's funny, he's a funny guy, but he's
really
just so, yeah, he's funny in conversation. He's really funny, but on the course, he is so boring. He gives you nothing. And I was hoping maybe something would happen when he won, like some kind of celebration, but no, nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
It's like how I even tweeted that. It's like, how can we get excited if you don't?
Yeah, you start to wonder like where he falls on the autism spectrum. Like, does he just not understand like what he?
He's a savant.
He's a golf savant. So that was pretty good.
U.S. Open.
Sure, the U.S. Open, which I was at, that was great. That was a story that everybody wanted Phil to win because, you know, he missed his. He got there late because he was going to his daughter's graduation from eighth grade. And this was, you know, repeated ad nauseum by the TV people. And there's part of me, the iconoclastic part, I guess, that likes to see when these stories don't come through, these tailor-made narratives.
Yeah.
And, you know, Justin Rose, again, a really great guy. Someone who has belonged to this group of English golfers who just couldn't get it done in a major. I think Faldo before him was the last English golfer to win, which is shocking, really. But, yeah, he came through and he did it, and you know, it was Father's Day, and his own father had passed away from cancer, and it was just a really great story for another, you know, just great guy. And I followed him for most of that last round, and you could feel the pressure. It was unbelievable, and he handled it, and he was great.
Yep. Yeah, it's hard to root against Phil. He's lovable. He's a big teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he got his in the British Open, which was
the Open, you know, Championship, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, you know what? If we're going to call ours the U.S. Open, I'm absolutely going to call theirs
the British Open. Okay, yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, Royal and Ancient, but that's how I'm going to do it. And, you know, Phil, what's so great about Phil is that I genuinely believe this guy has never lost his incredible enthusiasm, not just love, but incredible enthusiasm for golf. You know, alone among the big American golfers, he went and played the Scottish Open the weekend before. He won that. You know, and he's not a Lynx golfer. He's not a guy who typically excels here, but he prepped himself and he didn't let the U.S. Open get him down, which was one of the all-time heartbreaks, I think. It was his sixth time being a runner-up. And he went and put together one of the, you know, the most clutch and brilliant final rounds I've ever seen, ever.
Amazing.
And it was a well-deserved win. You know, he suffered in the U.S. Open, but I think the golf gods reward you when you're someone like Phil, who is just so positive and so just kind of an interesting and good guy. And then poor Lee Westwood choked again in the final round. And I think that's going to be his cross to bear the rest of his career. But it was certainly great to see Phil win.
Well, you know, you described your 18th hole when you did everything. You know, you thought you hit the ball beautifully. And look what happened. Mm-hmm. It resulted in five or six extra shots than you wanted it to.
Right.
So do we call that choke?
Well,
even at that level, you know, the ball, once the ball leaves the club face, it's pretty much out of your control.
You know, when a guy though has been in contention a lot of times and routinely shoots 76 and 78s in the last round, and he, you know, he himself practically admitted it. I forget the interview he did, but after the British Open, basically saying, you know, the nerves get to me in the final round. And there are some players I think we can identify that it happens to them over and over again. You know, not like Adam Scott where you recover, but like Greg Norman or Lee Westwood, these guys, there's something about it. It just doesn't work for them in that last round.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, I'm going to call you on that. You know, talk about choking, because one of your articles that you recently wrote was Why Tiger Woods Will Win the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
What happened?
That's a great call.
And now he plays so well, he's still number one in the world, and yet we get to the majors, and is it a head game? Is it, what is it, that, especially after having such a great round the week before, he comes out on the PGA Championship and does not have a good round at all.
It's mystifying, and my take has been, he certainly slumped after his whole scandal. We know that. He lost his ranking. My take, though, is that he's, you know, recovered by now. And what I kept saying, right, you know, is just that, hey, look, it's not easy to win a major. He's just been unlucky in the majors. It's going to happen for him. But the more we go on here and the more he struggles and the more he just doesn't look like himself, especially on the weekends. But like you said, the PGA even before then. Yeah, you really start to wonder, is there something going on in his head? And it's hard to imagine for a guy who's won 14 of them, but it's the results speak for themselves, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's definitely a love-hate for fans, and that's good for the sport. I really think that parity, like in team sports, parity is bad for the sport. I think that dynasties help sports because then you love or hate that team, right? You know, when they talk about baseball, the golden age of baseball in the 50s, well, to the everyone who was outside of New York, it was not the golden age of baseball, you know, but because the press was based in New York, it was the 50s, you know, and you had three baseball teams that were all succeeding. Yeah, it was the golden age for those folks.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, I think Tiger's initial dominance, I think, was huge for the sport. I think it brought the sport to a generation of players that maybe were not being, you know, maybe were not getting into golf because it was seen as an old person's sport or a white sport or whatever.
There's no question that the Tiger impact on well, look at all the golf courses that were built after that all happened.
Sure, sure, and the amount of prize money, how it increased in the PGA Tour, and the exposure and everything, But yeah, now I think it's one of those funny things where I think you're right that now that he's established that, and now that the Tiger Youth movement is kind of coming into its own as, you know, as older golfers, I think now parity is good for the sport, and especially I think when you have young winners who we can look at and say, oh, these guys are interesting. Now, like you said, I think it would be better, unfortunately, if we had more interesting young golfers. I think the current American crop of young golfers are so boring, unfortunately, just such boring people.
Yeah.
The Europeans are far more interesting, but, you know, it would be nice to see a little character. You know, Duffner might be funny in conversation or whatever. It'd be nice to see more personality and have them realize that, look, you're on a stage here.
Right.
You know, like, well, I guess that's not on them. I shouldn't demand that of them. But at the same time, you know, as a fan, you're like, oh, who are you? You know, are you just some boring dud?
Right. Right. Well, you know, and then people that you want to cheer for, that they still are not succeeding, like Sergio.
Sure, yeah,
he's a great example of somebody. He's a good personality. He's you know, a character for, you know, when you're looking at stories, he's a good character. But it's like always, you know, there's moments that it gets exciting, and then no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, and he's another guy that just doesn't. You very much doubt his ability to win a major just because he's so. Very much in his head, unfortunately. I like Sergio, but yeah, he's not a gamer, as we say, at least in the majors.
Right, right. Well, dude, this has been so much fun. I don't generally like to cover the tour and stuff, but you're not covering the tour as we talked about. You're looking for stories, and that's what I love about it, and that's why I've enjoyed having this conversation with you so much, and I hope that we can continue to do this. I hope Bill Simmons will allow it. You'll be on another podcast, but it's been great. Thank you so much for your insights and your stories and your great piece.
Again, yeah, well, thank you, Fred. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me.
And I think that you may want to follow the lead of a lot of Golf Smarter listeners and start checking into some of the shows that we're doing so that you can break 100. I think it will help.
All right, well, yeah, I'll do that. Absolutely.
We're going to work on your mental game yet.
Sounds great. That sounds perfect.
So here's something I've not done before. I'm actually producing this show on Monday night because I've got a tea time on Tuesday morning. No, it doesn't affect you, but I thought you'd like to know I'm playing hooky from work to get in 18 holes. So if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions on the podcast or our all-new Golf Smarter app, please download that one for free. Click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.